It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Cofield and Company here on this Thursday. Boise is the site for the Mountain West Conference title game. Cofield and Matt Neverett on the ground in Idaho. And wanted to give you a little preview as we roll out the next 2 days of coverage here on ESPN Las Vegas. Before we get to anything, Matt, about the game and the site and all that, I did want to talk a little bit of recruiting because in the midst of all of this mania going on with the Mountain West Conference title game, the Rebels had to secure a class, and they had a lot of commits going into signing day. They added a few more. I thought it was kind of interesting on Monday. Dan Mullen, at the beginning of his press conference, actually had a couple of lines about recruiting and wanted to point out that, hey, while all of this is going on, we are still very much paying attention to recruiting.
Yeah, and I think that's very important for any coaching staff at this time of year, any coaching staff that's especially those that are playing for something still to mention, because, you know, it is important to win these games and these conference championships. And for those teams that are, you know, biting for a college football playoff spot, this is still the most important part of their season while trying to recruit an upcoming class for the future of their team. And, you know, while the upcoming freshmen, the true freshmen, aren't necessarily a huge, huge thing in college football anymore as far as the guys that are going to get on the field and play right away with the way that the transfer portal is, it's still huge to create that depth. And, you know, just a lot of the names that were thrown around and announced yesterday for UNLV, we're talking like 6'5", 320-pound linemen, plenty of them. A bunch of wide receivers, Derek Garcia, obviously the big quarterback recruit. So be interesting to see how many of these guys are able to get on the field next year. But at the very least, you know, they're getting solid coaching and an opportunity to be committed to a team that's playing for a conference championship this weekend.
Yeah, I thought the premium on offensive and defensive linemen says a lot. They got 10 of those on the commit class. And I think the belief is that in the transfer portal, it's really hard to get ready to go veteran offensive lineman. The price is so freaking high because so many schools need offensive linemen that you have to build from within.
Absolutely. And I think we saw Dan Mullen kind of go with what you had mentioned as far as going out and getting some big names, like getting Alani Makaheli to come back. Reed Williams was the top center in the transfer portal this year from a lot of the rankings that I had seen. So they went out knowing in year one of a new coaching staff that they were going to need to go out and, you know, get some ready-made guys to throw out their day one on the offensive line, and they were able to do that. And we're seeing a lot of different bodies on the defensive side of the ball on the line getting rotated in and out. A lot of younger players as well, Elijah Logo, Elias Rudolph, a lot of these guys that are freshmen, redshirt freshmen, getting an opportunity. And Dan Mullen in his press conference did say, like, hey, you know, that's a great recruiting tool that we have. Like, we have so many guys that rotate in, especially on the defensive side of the ball, that if you are a dog and even if you're younger, you're probably going to get an opportunity to get some snaps at the very least in game action for a UNLV team next year. That's going to be just as darn good, especially if they're able to keep a lot of these guys on roster that are here this year.
Getting ready for tomorrow's Mountain West Conference title game. It's a 5 o'clock kickoff right here on ESPN Las Vegas. Matt Neverett, voice of the Rebels, is with us. All right, when people come up to you and they ask you, hey, Matt, how do the Rebels go 10-2 with a brand new quarterback and 50-plus new players? What's your answer?
I mean, it's tough to say because it really is, I think a home run hire in Dan Mullen. That's an obvious one. And the staff that he brought in, Corey Dennis on the offensive side, kind of picking up where the momentum left off. I mean, they set a school record for points per game last year, and they did it again this year with a whole different team, whole different offensive style, so it wasn't just the go-go. I would say it was a team of veteran players, not quite last chance U-esque, like we had said at the beginning of the year, but a team of veteran guys that they were able to get to come together in very short order, especially on the offensive side of the ball, and kind of pick up where the momentum left off last year, in a defense that has gotten tremendously better throughout the course of the regular season. I mean, this was a team, one of my notes that I've got for the game tomorrow, in that stretch against Air Force, Boise, New Mexico in the regular season, they gave up 147 points in three games. They've given up 63 in the last four. So you want to talk about a turnaround and a defense that has given this team a chance at the end of the year. I think it's about a bunch of veteran guys who kind of figured it out on the fly this year on both sides of the ball.
Anthony Calandra is success at quarterback, and right from the get-go was a big part of it. Why do you think AC10, as you call him on the broadcast, deserved to be the Mountain West Conference Offensive Player of the Year?
Well, far and away the best passer in the conference. I mean, he finished with over 3,000 yards and 22 touchdowns to just 8 interceptions. He was as efficient as it gets. He spread the ball out as well. And then that threat with the legs cannot be denied. He's one of four quarterbacks this season with over 3,000 passing yards and 500 rushing yards. He's got a rushing, he's got a passing touchdown and 15 rush yards in every game. So consistency and creativity are at the peak of what Anthony Calandria does so well. When he's at his best, he's playing playground ball, and there's not too many quarterbacks you can say that about. A lot of guys are better when they're on schedule, on track, you know, 1, 2, 3, get the ball out and let your playmakers do the work. But Calandre is a playmaker on this offense, and he's one of those guys that has also gotten a lot better throughout the course of the regular season with his decision-making as far as when and where to tuck the ball, knowing the game situation.
I didn't see final voting. I'm not even sure you get access to that on Mountain West Conference awards, but number two choice could have been Jet Thomas. I mean, he's a guy who finished with 1,155 yards from scrimmage on only 162 touches. He had a tremendous year in a role where he probably was about the 60-65% the lead back.
And I think we said it on the broadcast last week against Reno that if Jet Thomas played a fully healthy 12 games and got a full load of carries, they would have been a lot tougher of a decision for offensive player of the year. Nothing against Bryson Barnes. I think he probably finished second in the voting, and he was tremendous. He was a, you know, one man show a lot of times offensively for a high-powered Utah State team this year. But Jet Thomas, one of the most efficient running backs in the country, leads the country in yards per carry. He's got four games this year of 100 or more yards on less than 15 carries. He's the only player in the country to have hit those marks. He's explosive. He's patient as well when he needs to be. And he's a guy that is going to be at least given an opportunity to play on Sundays. You know, if he's back next year, it's going to be awesome because of what they're going to be able to do. And he's going to break some records. I mean, he is three rushing touchdowns away from tying the Chuck wagon for fourth most rushing touchdowns in UNLV history. And he's a guy like Amar McDuffie on the defensive side of the ball, those two returning starters that have pride in this program and would love to come back just to break those records.
Matt Never getting us ready for UNLV at Boise, another Mountain West Conference title game, another matchup against the Broncos. Offensively, since the game on October 18th, and the Rebels had a pretty good game, didn't run the ball real well until the very end against or with Jalen Glover. What has changed? Like, what do you see in terms of new wrinkles and maybe some weapons that have emerged over the last 4 or 5 weeks?
Well, especially last week, we saw the direct snap come into play with JoJo Earl running the show there. We saw a direct snap to Kevon Lee once or twice. I think that wrinkle that they threw in there last week was on purpose for this matchup in a game against the Wolfpack that they had dominated from the start right away. They were up big, so they were able to experiment. And we saw some different things, and talking to Caleb both on and off the broadcast about what they were able to add and put on tape that'll make a team like Boise State kind of think about it. We saw some plays where JoJo Earl would take the direct snap, Calandre would be in motion, he'd fake the pitch and then run it the other way. We never, ever, ever saw them give it to Calandre, but if they did, it was very similar to those lead blocking schemes that we've seen where he just takes the snap, rolls out, and he's got three offensive linemen basically guiding the way for him. So I think there's some elements there. I think there's some elements in the power run game from Kevon Lee that we've seen all season long. And Jalen Glover, as you had mentioned, just 5 carries for 36 yards in that game against the Wolfpack last week. And, you know, we've seen also, too, like a game where, you know, maybe we don't see Kevon Lee a lot. He typically comes out and gets a lot of early touches the next week. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Jalen Glover involved in both the running and the passing game early. We've seen at the beginning of the year, we saw Jaden Bradley as the number one preeminent deep threat between him and Anthony Calandre. That was a great relationship that was fostered in the spring when they got together in January. But Troy Omire really emerging as a one-on-one winner in a lot of battles. I mean, that guy's a matchup nightmare. It's 6'4", 210. He's a guy who's been there with a couple different programs. He's played in the college football playoff. So there isn't going to be a moment that's too big for Troy Omire, and they're starting to really unlock his potential in the downfield passing game.
Also, Mullen told a really good story about Tayshaun Lyons and spreading the ball and the young guys getting in there and showing patience, not getting frustrated because the payoff will be there because you could be the target and Calandre can find you, especially if they're going to double Bradley.
Yeah, and that was, for those that didn't hear that one, it was during the Miami-Ohio game. There was a point where Tayshaun Lyons, who really hadn't played a lot, if at all, at that point in the year, what was that, the fourth game of the non-con slate, and Dan Mullen's word, he was kind of pouty on the sideline, just walking around, and he goes, hey, you better wipe that look off your face, otherwise I'm not going to put you in there. I guess he did. Three plays later, he had his first career passing or receiving touchdown. All's well that ends well, and he's turned in a really good redshirt sophomore year, but that's kind of the theme of Dan Mullen in terms of his leadership. He's like, hey, I got plenty of options, and if you want to get in, you're going to get touches because of the way that this offense spreads the ball around with Anthony Calandre. And again, he mentioned it too, that's a great recruiting point on that side of the ball. Like, hey, if you're a transfer wideout with pretty good JUCO and you're a good physical matchup, you're going to get opportunities right away in this offense. The ball is spread, the wealth is spread, and you know, normally on my spotting charts, I list like 6 wideouts. I think I have 8 or 9 listed for UNLV. I'm pretty much 3 deep at all those wideout spots and a tight end.
He's the voice of the Rebels, the voice of baseball right here in Las Vegas. Matt Nevers up on ESPN Las Vegas. Got the big Mountain West Conference title game coming up on Friday, 5 o'clock kickoff, 4 o'clock with the Ted Wiens pregame show right here on ESPN Las Vegas. You touched on the defense. To me, that's been the biggest story of the season. They were down and out after the back-to-back Boise and New Mexico disasters. 63 points the rest of the way. Point to a couple of things that have changed defensively that has turned this thing around.
Well, you'll hear in our interview with Marcel McDuffie, if you listen to the Ted Wiens pregame show, talking to him. I mean, he said it all year. Him and Jake Pope have basically echoed each other all season long as far as the biggest difference being the communication on the defensive side of the ball. And that's kind of what we expected coming in with this Paul Gunther-led defense that within the preseason we heard, oh, it's an NFL-style defense, NFL-style defense. What makes it unique? Well, we found out it's the communication and the, you know, the individual checks once you get to the line. They figured it out. And I think Marcel said in the interview that they kind of, after that New Mexico game, their second straight loss, third straight, just abysmal defensive performance, really just looking themselves in the mirror and saying, we know we've got the bodies. We know we've got the guys in house. It's just about really locking it and really focusing and taking it seriously every single day of practice and listening to the veteran coaching staff. That was the other thing, just trusting the guys that this school has brought in to teach them. And, you know, not only the defensive pressure in the backfield like we've seen all season long, 13 interceptions through the first 12 games of the season, but also in terms of getting pressure on the quarterback. I think for me, that's the single biggest area where they were able to make a switch. They had 20 sacks in their last 5 games. Really, really good stuff. That is even more incredible when you consider that in the 4 games before that, they had one sack. And they were trying different things. They had you know, sent 8. There was a lot of cover 0. But now we're seeing them get a lot of different ways to get pressure on the quarterback without sending extra bodies. We saw against the Hawaii matchup a lot of 3-2-6, and they still got 4 sacks in that game. Last week against Reno, they went back to their true 4-2-5 base, and you know, Chief Borders and Tumisha Adelea have emerged as real edge containment on the outside that have been outstanding towards the end of the season as veterans taking a leadership role. It's just about, like they say, communication and everybody being in the right spot. Marcel said in the interview, we'd look at tape and Coach Gunther would show us, hey, on this play, we're really tough to gain yards if all 11 of us are doing what we're supposed to be doing. If that one guy's out of a role, bang, 50-yard play, bang, 40-yard chunk touchdown. So they just kind of looking at it, taking stock of where they were at the middle of the year. And we've seen a definite switch here over these last 4 or 5 weeks.
I think nothing helps a defense more than competition or perceived competition in terms of locking in. So I'll give you a couple of guys who've stepped up. First of all, the linebacking core, finding that second linebacker has been kind of a challenge all season. So they've rotated. Bryce Edmondson, a one and done, has come in and done a decent job. Zay Patterson, a young guy, has done a good job. But I got to point out Blessing Alualu, Tulia Motu, who's done a really good job. Last 2 games are his 2 highest PFF rated games. And I'll throw out one other name on the safety line, and that's Trey Fulton. So in Fulton and Blessing, you're talking about third year guys who are really making a big input. Impact down the stretch here, and it's helping the defense.
Oh, and it's funny, we started this interview talking about the recruiting and the class that's coming in. These guys are perfect examples of what you can be at UNLV. Trey Fulton is a guy whose name that we've been wanting to call here for a couple of years, and you talk about a matchup nightmare on offense for a guy like Troy O'Meara. Fulton creates some real challenges on the defensive side with his length and speed. He's 6'3", maybe 200 pounds on a good day. And then Blessing Alualu, Tui Olomotu, which, by the way, Steve, the development for him has been great. The development for you and Caleb as well in terms of pronouncing the name, even attempting to pronounce the name. Bravo to you guys. It's a tough one. Almost as bad as Kamola Kaehua, who we haven't seen as much of over these last couple of weeks. But, yeah, Blessing is the second leading tackler among this linebacking core. And just checking my numbers here, the fourth leading tackler on this team. He's a guy who really didn't play for a couple of games. Those games where they were going down defensively, we didn't see a lot of Blessing. But he just kept his nose to the grindstone. It's been a tough nut to crack as far as that linebacking core this year. And I think we've seen not only him progress, but Zay Patterson as well. That's a name that I found myself calling on tackles a lot more at the end of the season. But I think Blessing is a guy who is bound to, if he wants, to come back and really be the leader of this defense because he's similar to Marcel in a lot of ways. He's kind of a bigger dude, more of a stay-at-home, true middle linebacker who's not going to be the rah-rah, in-your-face vocal leader unless he's needed to be. And I think with McDuffie's leadership kind of over-blessing over his couple of years, I think he's got an opportunity next year if he stays to really take over that role for Marcel.
ESPN Las Vegas with full coverage of the Mountain West Conference title game. Matt Nevert, voice of the Rebels, is up with Cofield. Boise is the site. Let's talk about meeting number one and what the Rebels could learn from meeting number one. They scratched and clawed and stayed in the game in that first game. They were down 28-24 at the half. And then second half, the offense stalled, but the defense really was the problem. It just got blown off the field, and the running backs for Boise were incredible. What did you see defensively in terms of breakdowns in game one that they absolutely need to fix in the second game?
I mean, it was just a lot of gap discipline. It's one of the things that Caleb and I have been talking about on the broadcast all season long, is if you got 10 guys doing your job and that one guy slid over one gap from where he's supposed to be, bang, 50-yard chunk play. And that's been the biggest turnaround since that Boise State loss for this defense, as far as the communication and as far as not allowing big plays. And, you know, I'm just about ready in terms of my research for this one. The one or two notes that I was going to try to find tonight was how many 50-yard plays did they allow in that game? And then how many they've allowed since, because there might be one. It might be that Hawaii touchdown on their opening drive where they didn't see the red zone again the rest of the game. That was the biggest thing. And that, when we were calling that game, I mean, you were down on the sideline. It just felt like anytime Boise State touched the ball, especially in the second half, you're like, all right, where's this big play coming from? Because they're going to spring something. And they did it with some unique play calling as well. We saw some wide receiver, jet sweeps, some handoffs to a straight wide receiver. We saw a couple of direct snaps as well. And with UNLV kind of opening the offensive playbook, so to speak, over these last couple of weeks, there's nothing to hold back. I think we're going to see some really crazy play calls from both teams. But I think that for Boise State, getting Maddox Madsen back is going to be a huge emotional lift. I'm interested to see, though, how it's going to affect the rhythm that they developed with Max Cutforth, especially in the big comeback win last week where he was Mountain West Offensive Player of the Week. And it is Madsen's job. If he's healthy, he's earned it. He's earned the right. And just by the virtue of staying this year with all the money that was thrown around to him in the offseason, he's earned the right to start when he's healthy. But just in the back of my mind, there's a note that I'm like, maybe that affects the offensive rhythm enough to where it stalls just enough for UNLV to get over that hump. Because despite the fact that they got blown out 56-31, UNLV did put up 30-plus points. And they put up 29-plus points in every game this year. So you can basically put that as your baseline. That's where the starting point is offensively. It's going to be about making adjustments. And one of the things I'm going to ask Coach Mullen in our pregame interview is, how much of the tape from that early game are they looking at to get ready for this game, even though it was about a half a season ago?
See, with Madsen, I fear that guy. I don't know what it is, because he's a good quarterback. Yeah, I don't think he's a great quarterback, but he's unreal against UNLV. And I'll tell you, the one area that he's crazy in is there's usually a run during these games. And I was just looking back. He had a 25-yard run in the game this year. In the championship game last year, he had a 14-yard run. He also, during the regular season in a 29-24 win, had a 49-yard run. He's one of those guys who just makes plays. And like I said, not an amazing quarterback, but, man, he's a freaking winner, and he steps it up against UNLV.
And I don't know what it is. I'm in the same page as you. Like, nothing against Maddox Madsen, but you look at him, he's 5'10", 210 pounds. He's not a great arm. He's not a great runner by any stretch of the imagination. But somehow he wins. He finds ways to get the right guy, the right ball in the right spot. Having an NFL-style offensive line also helps him tremendously. But I'll be interested to see the legs this week, coming back from that foot injury. I mean, you mentioned he had the 49-yard run in the regular season matchup. He had 70 rushing yards combined all season long. And someday college will get where they need to be and get rid of the rule that sack yardage counts as negative rush yards for a quarterback, but that's for a different day. But Madsen's not a great runner, but against UNLV, 4 passing touchdowns and led an offense to 56 points earlier this year. So they're going to have to make some adjustments. I think with the way this defensive front has been getting pressure on the quarterback, that only bodes well for UNLV. And I think it's going to be a different kind of defensive look that Boise State's going to be staring down on Friday night.
Yeah, I think the total is interesting. Last look, it was 58.5, but last look at the forecast, and Matt Nevert's with us here on ESPN Las Vegas, 40 degrees, rain. I mean, it gets any lower, then all of a sudden you're talking about real slippery, maybe icy and snowy. This could be a wild game, and one of those games that's just a grind-out game that comes down to tackling and the running games.
And I think it's going to have to be. We saw it last year in the championship game. If it wasn't for that Ashton Gentry busted out run at the end of the first half to take a 2-touchdown lead, it would have been that type of game. And the second half was very low scoring. I think we're going to see a lower scoring game by these two teams' standards. I think that that turnover battle that's always so important is going to come to the forefront. Whoever wins that is going to win this game. Anthony Calandre with two interceptions in the win against Reno. I don't know if he throws an interception in this game. I think he's going to do whatever it takes to keep control of the ball, especially given the weather conditions. But we've seen this team go into some really cold, really breezy and snowy environments this year, like Wyoming and like Colorado State, and go in and come out with a pretty dominant win on, in both regards. So I don't know if the weather is a factor as much as we would think it is for a team filled with Floridians and Californians.
Yeah. I mean, it's just been the road success in general with two coaching staffs, with lots of different players. The UNLV has just become a real road warrior with success.
Most road wins in the country since the start of last year. They're going for their 12th this year. And how about this one? 21-5 since the start of last year overall. That's the best record of any Group of Five team and tied for the eighth best record in the country. Rebels have won 30 of their last 40 games. This isn't just like a win streak or a couple of years of sustained success. This is like one of the best runs in all of college football over the last 2 years.
So getting ready to go to the food store stadium there in Boise. Remind me, because I can't remember the setup of every press box.
This is the one where you've got your own office, basically, in the back.
It's one of the biggest ones. That's great. There is an office in the back. So I will be doing the show tomorrow, 2 to 4, in that back area office. The windows open or not, because this has been a real point of contention, with Caleb Herring, who is a true Southern California native on the staff. I'm totally a wimp now. I'm freezing all the time, but you know, you got to tough it out when you're the sideline guy.
Yeah.
Windows open or not, and then what happens with Caleb? Is he dressed properly? Because it could be snowing or raining right into the booth. These are first world problems for broadcasters.
Of course, right? These are the important things in our industry. Last year. When it was, 30 degrees, cold as hell, snowing everywhere, we had the windows open. It was like a gladiator type feel. If they'll play in it, we'll announce in it. Part of it is so that we can have our satellite fins to be able to hear you. So if anyone's to blame, it's you for wanting to get on the air. With the way that it's set up, they kind of have to poke out the window. I think we could get away with it for this one, but I dress warm. I'm always all for opening the windows. I like feeling the environment, especially what should be a sold out, really hostile game on the road. I'm going to vouch for windows open. If we could have survived last year, I think we could survive this year, but we'll see. I like hearing the pop of the crowd. And I'm wondering if we get a great travel for UNLV fans. We saw on social media that the plane tickets were expensive. I would love to see as much red as we can out there to contrast that blue turf. But they don't make it easy in Boise.
No, I thought they made some good noise when the band came on the road. They made good noise. Oh, it's a hard trip. And I'll hand it to Boise fans, because it's really not the biggest community. And they've got whatever they've got this year with a scale down stadium to like 34,000. They fill it. The production there is really loud. The speakers are loud. It is an incredible environment. And because of the way the stadium is built, it feels like the crowd is kind of on top of you. It's almost like a little arena. It gets freaking loud there. And it was loud the first time around. For the players who were there for the title game last year, a night game, they know how loud it's going to be, because it was incredible at times between the speakers, the music, the noise, the fans. This is a real challenge for Anthony Calandre and company on offense.
Yeah, I'm just glad that nobody mentioned that they didn't know where Boise was on a map this year, so we didn't have to look at that transition every single time they cut to the video board.
Right.
Where
it was. Malik Williams, Haj Malik Williams.
It was a good one last year.
A lot of people don't know. I still have trouble locating Idaho on a map. It's no insult. I'm getting old and I forget maps. I forget things.
I know it's southern Idaho. Close enough. It's a unique atmosphere. And for a lot of these guys that have not been there in a playoff type of game, the regular season day game is one thing, but this is different. This is like a gladiator going into the arena. It's the fifth matchup in the last 25 months between these two. I'm getting sick and tired of seeing the blue and the gold, or blue and the orange. And then we go back there for basketball as well. So this is our fourth trip to Boise in a calendar year. God, I swear to God, if UNLV ends up in the Boise Bowl, I will be so furious. I don't think that's going to happen, but I'm sick and tired of going to Boise. It'd be a lot better to come back with the win. And look, it's the boogeyman. That's what it is. They got a hill to climb. They have not been able to get over that hump. Boise State has been the boogeyman for the Rebels over the last couple of years. No other way around it. They've lost 10 straight. They've not won since America's bicentennial 50 years ago against the Broncos. I think they got as good a chance as they've had over the last 3 years in these championship games to knock them off.
There he is, Matt Everett, getting us ready for tomorrow's game between the Rebels and Boise State. Another challenge for the Mountain West Conference title. Line right now, Boise 4.5. The total is 58.5. We'll continue with our preview of the football weekend here on Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas as Jeff Parles and Adam Candy are on the way.
It's Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Cofield & Company, ESPN Las Vegas, 3-0 Lions. Cowboys on the move, though, on their opening drive of Thursday night football. Jeff Parles, Adam Candy, and the man who the show's named after, Steve Cofield, joins us right now from Boise, Idaho. Steve, how's the flight up there?
It's always nice. It's always very easy. Candy was a broadcaster with UNLV for a long time, so they're first class. Only problem is you land in Boise, and it is December, and it's a crapshoot with the weather, so right now about 40 and drizzly, and I think that's what it's going to be for the next day plus, so football game in the rain.
Grapple? Is it going to be the grapple?
I don't think we're going to get to the grapple level. You're more the grapple expert over me. We talked about this the other day.
Yeah, buddy.
What do we actually need temperature-wise, amateur meteorologist, to get to the grapple level?
I only know how to explain this to people in Celsius. They've got to be like between 32 in the freezing and 40, and you know that then it depends on the jet stream. And listen, dude, if you look outside and it's not snow but it's not rain, it's coming down, then you got the grapple.
Yeah, I always love when people call this football weather. We all grew up in the Northeast. This is not fun weather, and it'll change the game, I think. I don't know if it's going to hurt UNLV more than Boise, but I don't know that we're going to see like a high-flying act out there on either side if it's super slick.
Well, and Cofield, the news with Madsen looking like he's going to give this thing a go, this does not feel like the ideal conditions to be having a guy come back and playing, especially when it looked like it was going to be a season ender for him when he went out.
Well, really good point. He's a guy who doesn't do most of his damage with his legs, although he's, for some reason, he's gotten UNLV in the last three games with at least one long key run. I think for this year, his official numbers are 50 carries for 70 yards. But he did have a 25-yarder in the game against UNLV back on October 18th. Last year in the title game, I think he had a key 14-yard run. I know in the regular season meeting, he had a 49-yard run. Now, it is a lower body injury, which I hate this. I was reading today that they had some sort of special insole for one of his shoes. So you would assume at that point it's got to be lower leg, knee, calf, or foot. I don't think it's ideal for him to have slick weather out there. And this place is fascinating. I know Candy's a big study on Boise, and he likes coming here as a tourist and a traveler. It's so micro focused because they don't have major league sports that some of the conversation gets kind of wacky. And I guess I'm out of the loop on this because while UNLV is growing in terms of audience for football in Vegas, you don't get the same sort of attention like day to day that you get with Boise State football. And there was a video put out by BJ Raines, who's one of the big media guys up here with his Bronco sports. I forget what it's called. I was screwed up, and I screwed up to his face too. But anyway, he put out a video of Maddox Madsen practicing at the beginning of the week, and immediately people were like, "Ooh, I don't know. He doesn't look healthy." Like the judgment on what he is right now. I guess the timeline was longer than this for him to return, so people are speculating that maybe he's only like 80-85%. That's all speculation. He's probably the best option to go out there, although the guy Cutforth came in and actually got better as time went along. But yeah, I mean, I think it's probably the biggest issue storyline going into the game because Maddox Madsen, and I hate putting it this way, but he's just been a winner, and he's been a winner against UNLV. Like whatever he needs to do, if it's come up with a big run, if it's deliver on a deep pass, deliver on crossing routes across the middle, find the tight end on deep routes, he's been awesome. But what do they do if he's not 100% and if he gets off to a slow start? Do they pull him? Because there's a lot of people here who want the backup to start instead of Madsen. And that's another one of the storylines is this guy's led him all these wins over the years, guys. And he's constantly been under the microscope where fans here are like, yeah, he's not that good. We don't want him. We got to get someone better.
Injury-wise for this week, Cofield, UNLV side of things, how's it looking right now?
Well, I think it's pretty good. I don't think there's any more issues with Jet Thomas, although he's listed as questionable. They have been without a good weapon in Varkeys Gums, one of the tight ends. He's kind of their pass catching speed tight end. He's out. Alani Makaele, who's a super, super, super senior guy who started with UNLV, then went to UCLA for a year, was actually a commit. This is how far back he goes. He was a verbal commit of Tony Sanchez. And when Arroyo came in, I think Arroyo took like three guys or four guys from Sanchez's like 12 player verbal commit class. And Alani was one of the guys, and he's, you know, gigantic dude, 6'2", 340 pounds. Well, anyway, long story short, he did tweak a calf. He said it was just a strain. He tweaked a calf. He wasn't in his uniform in the second half against Reno. So that's kind of key. They have pretty good depth at the guard positions. Donovan Manson has played enough at the one guard slot that they should be okay if Makaele can't go. And then beyond that, Zay Patterson is listed as questionable. But what happens, this injury report from the Mountain West Conference comes out usually 2 days before the game, and UNLV the last 6 weeks has generally had between 14 and 17 guys listed as questionable. And then by the game, there's like three or two or one. Cam Friel's another guy. I haven't really gotten an indication if Calandria had to come out, who's going to go in. If it's Friel, I don't know if he's ready to go yet. I know the last game, Gael Ochoa, who's a redshirt freshman, he was warming up, but that's kind of a, you know, super emergency situation. And, you know, the football guys have kind of shined upon UNLV from a health standpoint. They haven't had a lot of injuries. They did lose Alex Orji. And at the time, I remember when Orji went down, I was like, all right, they're going to have to scale things back with Calandria, and they didn't. And he's had so many big runs. It's one of those things, if you don't watch Anthony Calandria play on a regular basis, super underrated in terms of his speed and being able to get, you know, extra yardage on plays and also key first downs. I think for the season, he's got 8 touchdowns and 555 on the ground. So those are the biggest things injury wise. But yeah, I think both sides are in pretty decent shape in terms of injuries.
Looks like Cofield, the Dan Mullen potentially leaving deal is not going to happen this offseason, which is amazing news for the Rebels. But I just saw this for the first time when it just got put into the rundown. Adam and I were talking about this at the top of the 4 o'clock hour of how this has turned into a circus for Penn State. And Matt Campbell now seems to be the guy that they are working toward a hire on.
I mean, if internet reports are to be believed, and there's some credible sources saying that they're working on it, doesn't mean that they're going to come to an agreement. But yeah, the Penn State thing, and Candy and I think we spoke about this the other day, right? Candy, going back to the Dave Rice deal, where Dave Rice was fired by UNLV basketball, by UNLV as the basketball coach in January. It might have been like January 18th of that year. And then they get to hiring season, and they had to go like seven deep on their list because they talked to different people. They got turned down. They wasted a week with Mick Cronin. And I don't think at the time that was an agent type deal. I don't think, you know, Dave Rice exacted revenge. This looks clearly like James Franklin flexed his muscle with his agent. And we're seeing how powerful agents are around college football. And they have like railroad is not the right word, because that means they did something wrong. I mean, they're doing what they can do because he's tied to a powerful agent. But Penn State got caught here, and now they're well into this hiring process. To me, if they come up with Matt Campbell, I think Matt Campbell's a really good coach, and I think Matt Campbell is probably, you know, that small step away from being a national title contender by going to a place like Penn State that does have everything.
Here's the part I don't get about the Matt Campbell thing. First of all, he signed his contract extension 4 months ago. 4 months ago, he signed through 2032. But the part I don't get here is, looking through, Cofield, you know how that buyout structure has been prohibitive for certain guys? $2 million if he leaves for another Power 4 head coaching job.
Wow.
$2 million. I don't understand how it didn't start here for Penn State, because Matt Campbell has done a pretty damn good job with that Iowa State team, especially last year.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back a couple of years when Purdy's senior year wasn't great, but his junior year, I think that was the year they came out to play UNLV and they brought all these fans out. It was like 40,000 plus. They also had Breece Hall, right? I mean, that was a tremendous team. Campbell's stock couldn't have been any higher. And I remember him being mentioned in the offseason, or, you know, early part of the NFL hiring season, as a candidate to actually coach with the Lions, to be the Lions head coach before Dan Campbell got the job. So I don't think his stock has dropped. They haven't been winning at the same level. They've been winning at a pretty high level, but If Penn State can land him, that's a tremendous get. And I don't know, Candy, why don't we pat Iowa State on the back while it's not protecting itself with a low buyout of $2 million? It's not doing what all the other administrative slobs do, these pigs who are promising guys $30, $50, $70 million. And we keep saying, like, when is this going to end? I guess it might end with Matt Campbell going from Iowa State to Penn State, and then Iowa State is going to be looking for a coach. And then maybe Dan Mullen's in the mix for Iowa State. I don't know. Dan Mullen has been in the chatter the last 2 days. He's been mentioned more and more as a possibility. I saw a USA Today columnist wrote, hey, you know, swallow your pride. I don't even know what that means. And make a run at Dan Mullen. So yeah. If Mullen has said he wants to stay, I don't believe anyone, deep down what they say, because an offer could come along that you can't turn down. If Penn State were to offer Dan Mullen, if he were up next or in the mix, if they were to offer him $10 or $11 million a year and some one of these buyouts of $40, $50 million, I mean, could you blame the guy?
I mean, look, the no, not at all. And the trick, I think, with this Campbell contract is $2 million buyout, making $5 million a year, right? That's low end for power conference money. So I think there's a trade-off built into that. But again, if you're Penn State, the fact that you got to this point, you got to signing day, and you're still dealing with this, we talk all the time about how when free agency comes around, you're worth what the market says you're worth, right? So is this Penn State job really as good as we have looked at it as? I want to know that from both you guys. Like, this is a team that was on the verge of playing in the national championship game, and they can't get somebody to take their money right now.
So Ohio State, Michigan, Oregon, clearly better in the conference. I would argue USC is better as well in the Big Ten. So what? It's the fifth best job in the Big Ten, which is still pretty darn good in the grand scheme of things. But the fact that, and this just goes back to be careful what you wish for also. I know this year went very poorly for Franklin, causing him to lose his job, but this might have also just been the one-off where his quarterback wasn't as good as we all thought. So I just wonder if you just jumped the gun too quickly getting rid of him. I think it's still a top-five job in the Big Ten, but boy, with the way this has gone, and Adam, you brought up a really good point there with Campbell's buyout. Why didn't they start there? Like, he's a good coach. I don't think there's any arguing with that. You don't have to deal with the nonsense of the other buyouts, but $2 million is a drop in the bucket for everybody.
I'm guessing they got rebuffed early on because Campbell wanted to honor an extension he just signed. But now if you come back around and you're offering him life-changing money, then he's got to take a look at it. I think Penn State, you mentioned the Big Ten rankings. I think that's a five-way tie up top. I think Penn State is as good a job as Ohio State, Oregon, Michigan, and USC. I think in this cycle, I would argue Penn State is a better job than the Florida job because the pressures and the lack of reality that happens in Gainesville, I think they're completely out of control there. LSU is the best job. Penn State is the second best job. And Jeff, you nailed it. Franklin was doing a good job. I think he was going to break through at some point. I will guarantee you now, in a conference with more upper mobility and less competition in the ACC, he's going to freaking kill it at VTech. Now he's going to be a thorn on their side for years, recruiting wise. But that doesn't mean Penn State's not a good job. It is a tremendous job. They've got oodles of money. I won't go to the point of football absolutely is the first thing in that community. It's a morally bankrupt community. So if you want a great job and football means everything, that's what it means at Penn State. They just botched the process and they locked horns with an agent who stuck it to them, and this thing got stretched out. And then I think I'm guessing there's been a power struggle on, hey, do we go for a guy who is going to be a 10-year program guy, or do we have to satisfy people with a bigger name? Like, do we have to outshine James Franklin? Because I still don't understand how UCLA, I'm not going to say stole him, but UCLA took advantage of the fact that they were dragging their feet on Bob Chesney. That's probably the guy for the job. That's a guy you can build up to the job. I think Matt Rhule would have been great for the job, but there's a lot of people out there who don't think Matt Rhule is a way above average coach. I think Matt Rhule would have killed it at Penn State too, but this is embarrassing. And man, oh man, if Matt Campbell pulls out, tomorrow or late tonight and says, I'm staying, that old DiCaprio video, Penn State's going to be, I mean, they're going to get someone eventually, and they're going to get someone good, but this is ridiculous.
Well, Cofield, you and I talked about this a few weeks ago when Franklin got hired at FOD Tech. I said it was going to be that was going to end up being the best hire anyone makes this offseason, because Franklin at Virginia Tech is just absolutely perfect in a bad league, in a bad power conference league, with a program that everyone cares about football in Blacksburg because it's basically the only thing to do down there. So I think that's going to be great. And then, you know, it's just so interesting that Penn State has bungled this in the way that they have. And I agree with you on Chesney that he would have made a ton of sense there, but they just dragged their feet in the end for Penn State. If Campbell pulls out, I mean, where do they even go next? Like, Candy, we're going to add the Brian Daboll route at Penn State in that scenario. You want to do that?
I mean, more power to you. All right. Have fun.
Yeah. Also, too, hadn't been on since this happened at Michigan State. I mentioned Pat Fitzgerald to you a few weeks ago, Cofield, that I thought that was the way the search was going, and then Michigan State cut them in line on that, too.
Hey, he's a good hire. I mean, I don't know exactly what happened to Northwestern. Once you're sort of clear to the charges, you're allowed to coach again. So I think they recovered pretty nicely. I'll give you the biggest thing on the story to kind of go back to the root of this, and that was Dan Mullen potentially in consideration, you know, like whatever, seventh, eighth, ninth choice at Penn State. Again, Candy, you and I have talked about where UNLV football was 5 years ago. We could say 10 years ago. They had a blip year with Caleb Herring and Bobby Houck, but where they've been for the last 20 or so years, the fact that each year you're like, oh my God, UNLV's coach is going to leave because he's been so good. That is incredible. That is glass. I mean, it sucks to lose a coach, but that is glass overflowing for UNLV fans in Las Vegas.
Hey, by the way, Junior Gibbs, 1 yard touchdown. Cowboys 3, late first quarter in Motown. Jeff Parles, Adam Candy, Steve Cofield, Cofield and Company here on a Thursday. Fellas, you know, Cofield, up in Boise, they're used to winter weather. The Winter Olympics, this story I saw earlier this week, and this just is astounding to me. They're in February, and obviously they're going to be taking an Olympic hockey break this year for the NHL. The hockey venue is not ready yet. We're 2 months away. And now I saw a report today saying that the ice is now not the proper length either. What are we doing up in northern Italy here?
Okay. Here's my question. It's a bigger question. Because when it comes specifically to hockey, NHL's already talking about potentially not sending the players if the rink is too short, right? So we might not even have the usual Olympic representation. But here's my bigger question as we're slapping together venues with 2 months left. Why do we still do the Olympics?
Oh.
What's the point? We have a world championship of some sort in every sport we care about, right? Even the figure skating and all the things that people get excited about once every 4 years, there's a world championships for that. Go watch that. There's a world swimming championships. Go watch that. I don't understand why we do this. It costs so much money. These cities and these areas spend so much money on venues that are never used again, right? Yeah. Oh, we're building a hockey rink in Italy for the Olympics. Whoa, I guess when the NHL expands to Europe, then that'll be great. Because otherwise, it's going to become a very, very expensive garden. Like, what are we doing here? But
by the way,
all right. That's my bigger thing. With this hockey thing, it's stupid. If the rink's too small, don't send them.
By the way, you know, Brazil had to build some extra soccer stadiums for the World Cup, and I don't know if those stadiums are being used. Watch what's going to happen in Brazil, because there is, I think, an ACC football game already announced for Brazil. I think they're just going to try to get events there, and if it's American sports, and try to get some tourists there. It's happened in so many places where they've got all these venues. Hey, Candy, you know what? Close out here, because you got cut off there. Just give, again, a dose of UNLV football history and how incredible this is that they're in a third straight Mountain West Conference title game, and they're competing with Boise for conference supremacy.
Said it to Parles earlier, that just the concept of three straight years in a championship game for a program that was a doormat, that was thought to be a drag. Come on, man. This is a program that was thought to be, at one point, something the university should drop to just focus on basketball. Guys, the fact that they are now leading the way for this university? That is insane.
That's pretty nuts, man. You come into town, now you're proud to have the UNLV stuff on. It's like, hey, that football program has some swag to it.
What a turnaround. Cofield and Company, we're back tomorrow, 2 o'clock, right here, ESPN Las Vegas.